I'm Billy, I'm an addict.
Hiya, Billy.
This is quite a horrific feeling. I'm pretty nervous, so and I don't know quite how I'm going to share for 40 minutes, so I've got some little notes here that I probably just won't look at, but they're there anyway. That's the phone. I got clean. I've been clean since 2003, and that's when I came to my first NA meeting with an open mind. That was not the first NA meeting that I came to, but it was the first time I came here with an open mind and really wanting to get clean. I'll get into that, all that trying to get clean stuff in a bit. I guess, you know, I'll start at the beginning. So I said, like, I'm really nervous in here, there's lots of you. And as a kid, I was sort of really attention-seeking, but also painfully shy, which is a sort of a combination of things that have followed me in my life, those sort of contradictions. I could just, you know, I wanted everyone to notice me, but when it actually came to people and interacting with people, I was sort of like crippled with this like anxiety. And I remember, you know, I remember that from really young, and I had sort of weird behaviours as a result and stuff. And, you know, I feel like from quite an early age that I was just quite aware of wondering what people thought of me. I mean, I don't know if all kids feel like that. Maybe they do. But in my mind, when I looked at everyone else, they didn't. You know, they were always sorted. You know, they had sort of like perfect families and loads of brothers and sisters running around having a great time. And I was sort of like worried about stuff. Not that, like, you know, it was all like that. But and I remember, and sort of thinking back, I had having like OCD things from, I remember I learnt to tie my shoelaces, but that meant that I started to tie them, I had to tie them and untie them 3 times, which was, this microphone's like really low, but yeah, okay. So it was like tying them, untying them 3 times, and then one of the times I particularly remember, like, being really conscious of what people, of people judging me and what people might have thought of me was my friend. So, you know, I went to swimming school. I learned to swim when I was a kid, as you do. But somehow along the line, I forgot how to swim. I don't know how you forget how to swim, but I forgot how to swim. And then one of my friends was having a swimming party. So I was like, right, okay, I'm not going to swear, am I? But I was like, okay, swimming party, what the hell am I going to do? I can't remember how to swim. If I get an apple, everyone's going to know I can't swim. You know, panic. And in the logic of my mind was, it kind of sounds quite horrific, but I don't know. This was just, you know, what I devised. I'd had a friend who did gymnastics, and she'd had an accident and chipped her elbow. So I was like, right, what I need to do is chip my elbow, and then I'll have an excuse for not going swimming. Like, this was the, you know, that would be my saying excuse. So what I did, I tried to chip my elbow on the side of the bath. I mean, sounds quite horrific. I literally would go to those lengths. And I did end up injuring my arm to the point where I had it in a sling, which was great, because I kind of, then I got sort of like some attention for being kind of ill or something. And I got to go to the swimming party, but sit at the side while everyone else was in the pool. So that solved that problem. but, yeah, you know, quite an extreme way of dealing with it. And later I got my best friend to teach me how to swim again, so that was all right. But that's just an example of how my mind will, what I come up with to get out of situations that I feel like I need to get out of. I'll invent an entire plan, and it's never sort of sane, or it never used to be. It never used to be a sane pattern of thought. So, looking back, all of this, you know, all these sort of behaviours and just the way I felt was like I was just in a lot of fear. Just and from working my step four and stuff, like the basis of my step four was just so much fear. And I don't know like where it came from, and I don't really I don't bother figuring out if I've always been an addict or was born of an addict, or if that fear is why I'm an addict or anything. But I know that there was a lot of fear, and I didn't quite know what to do with it. And it manifested itself in sort of self-harm actions, basically. Another example was, and this I look back as like a real example of not being able to deal with like shameful feelings. Like I had this aunt, and she gave me this toy. My aunt was a nun, not that that's related, but she was a nun, a great aunt. She was a nun, and she gave me this toy, while I was there with my mum, and it was, and I didn't like it, but you know, I was like six or something. I didn't like the toy, and like I hadn't, you know, I wasn't at the age where I could pretend I liked something, you know, to make that person feel all right, and it, you know, and it showed, and my mum just, you know, told me off basically. As you do, you know, she probably felt embarrassed that I wasn't going to look very grateful for this toy. But I went up and I got sent up to my room, and I was like, the intense shame of that was like, I've done something wrong and I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. I can't deal with it. And and so I went to the bathroom, and that was the first time like I calmed myself in my past, and that was the first time I calmed myself. And don't know, yeah. I just couldn't deal with shameful feelings or feelings, really. There's some examples. anyway, there was some good stuff. I had quite a fun childhood. There was friends and, you know, school and all that kind of stuff. And But I always, you know, I think, you know, it's a common theme that I just kind of felt different. And, I just kind of felt different. And as I got older, and it sort of I started to just, like, act out in various different ways. And I figured out that, or I thought that one way to guarantee that I would be popular is to just sort of be really bad. So that's why, you know, and I sort of, went to different schools, and I was at one school, and I just thought I was kind of pissed off with with what they were doing, and I just thought, and I started to be kind of like a rebel, and that kind of worked. That really worked. People seemed to accept me at that point, so I just went with it, and ended up getting expelled from school. And at one point, one of the teachers, he just stopped me in the corridor, and he was like, well, why are you doing this? And I was sort of like really stumped by it. I was like, why am I doing this? I really, you know, I just didn't have an answer. I didn't actually know. It felt like there was a reason, but, you know, all it ended up doing was sort of getting me into a further place of somewhere I didn't want to be. And that's where, you know, I ended up then being in another school where I really totally didn't want to be, and felt completely different and sort of judged by everyone. So, and that's where I kind of, you know, this was sort of teenage years by then, and I started discovering alcohol, basically. And that was like a kind of real answer. That was a real answer to my problem, because as soon as I drank, I didn't feel awkward anymore, and I was like really funny, and I didn't really care. I didn't really care so much what everyone else thought of me, and I just thought, you know, that around about starting with that, I just thought, well, okay, well, that, you know, everything's going to be all right because we've got this, and just sort of carried on with that. But it would be, you know, like I would always drink way more than any of my friends would, you know, because we were all at that age where it was like, you know, we're underage, but you've got to drink because that's what everyone does. But I would, like, I'd have to do it, and my whole thing would be like, you know, so we'd be going out that night, and I'd be like, we've got to get some alcohol, and it was like, I'd be fixated on, like, where are we going to get it from? Like that was the most important thing of the whole night. Everyone else is worrying about, like, what they're going to wear and who they fancy is going to be there that night. And I'm just like, well, there's no point in worrying about any of that until we figure out where we're going to get the alcohol from. And that was the first point where, like, you know, I sort of noticed my friends just sort of being, like, acting differently around alcohol, just like, because they were like, why do you have to, why can't you stick to a couple of cans of beer? Why do you have to go and get a whole bottle of Bacardi? And it was like, and I'm sort of like, why wouldn't you? You know, I can understand them and they can understand me. And that was, as a result, like, and all through my using, whenever those situations arise where my friends weren't, I didn't feel like they were on the same path as me in terms of wanting to consume as many drugs as possible, then I'd just sort of get rid of them and get some new friends that did. This is a really awkward microphone, I have to say. I'm sort of doing, like, hunchback. So that was a sort of... I guess I figured out then that, you can always change your friends. I started getting quite, not feeling great, maybe a bit depressed, whatever, at that sort of age. And my close friends as well, they sort of said to me, they pulled me aside at one point and it's like, you shouldn't look quite so depressed because people don't like it. And that was like a real, I know at that point I had a conscious thought of like, right, don't ever tell anyone how you feel about anything or let them know. That I decided that at that point, and I can remember deciding it, and it was, a real downfall, because that sort of fueled my using, really, because it's an impossible thing to do. If I can't tell people how I feel, then I'm, like, seriously in trouble. It actually goes quite fast, doesn't it? Oh, I just swore. Right, blah, blah, blah. So there's lots of drinking. That was fun. There was some fun. There was lots of fun. There was lots of sleeping with loads of people. My main aims in life were would need to know that I was... everybody wanted to sleep with me and I sort of slept with everyone. That was great. And that I was the person that had taken the most drugs more than anyone else and that they could get drugs off me. I would even take drugs that didn't work or I didn't like frequently. I really hated smoking weed, but I'd just smoke it and it sit there completely paranoid, wondering if I'd just said what I just thought I'd said. like sort of paralysed in fear in my mind. But I would carry on doing it anyway. And then, I'd add some other drugs into the mix as well, just to, And sort of like ecstasy came along and... it didn't work on me. When I took ease, it didn't work on me for some reason. And I'd sort of be there and everyone else would be like, woo. And I'd be like, what am I meant to feel like? And they'd tell me and I didn't feel like that, so I'd just take some more. But, I'd carry on taking them even though they didn't fucking work until I devised something else that I could take. I'd moved away from home by this point, and it was all like party times. I'd found a little subculture that I could be in and feel fully accepted and go out every night. And I was like, this is life. I've totally found it. This is what I should be doing. It's all about hanging out with these people, staying up forever, taking loads of drugs, selling drugs, being really popular, and all of that. And there was one point when I thought, yeah, this is it, I'm really happy. I mean, it's quite, it's kind of naive. I don't know, I can't really sustain that forever. Well, it's pretty tragic if I did, but... it didn't last, obviously. Because it never does. It didn't last. Anyway, it didn't last for me. I don't know how people... I don't know how people take drugs on a sort of recreational basis, but I couldn't, and I always needed to move on to a bigger and better drug, and I needed to do that with better people and all that sort of thing. And like Andy was saying, like I I remember, there's lots of times when I first took heroin, I thought it was going to be literally the best, you know, because of the way it had been, like, depicted in TV, and I was really into Zamo of Grange Hill when I was a kid. I don't know if anyone remembers him, but I think I decided then that I was going to definitely take it. I thought it was going to be the best thing in the world, and I took it. It was crap. It was totally crap. I was, like, lying on bed feeling really ill, and I just thought, oh, what's the point in this? But I don't know. I wanted to be a junkie or something. I wanted, I hear people say that they didn't think they would get addicted or they didn't know. I didn't actually care. I didn't really mind. I just didn't know. I didn't feel like I had a purpose in life at all, and I didn't know what to do. So that would suffice for me, which is sad. You know, that's a kind of sad place to be, but I was all right with it. And, you know, to the point where I got, you know, as soon as I started taking it, I was like, great, I'll get a methadone prescription. And, you know, the doctor gave me free drugs. That was great. I thought I was winning at this point. But the thing is about it, it's like very unsociable where I ended up. Taking drugs and drinking affected my behaviour to a point that was, like, really antisocial. When I drank, I would end up, you know, I'd sort of end up crying and telling someone some sort of sob story and, like, cutting myself, which was really, you know, not what I wanted to be doing. And there's lots of stuff in my using that, you know, I could get really proud about, that I was arrested loads of times and the sort of, like, the more dramatic, like, sort of things out of a film were, like, great, yeah, but, you know, I didn't want people to see all the other stuff where I usually ended up, and where I actually ended up in my using was just on my own in a flat, taking a drug that, you know, kept me comatose most of the time if I was lucky, and then, watching Star Trek 3 times a day, the same episode, on the Sky One channel I was stealing from a next-door neighbour, because, that was literally the highlight of my day, watching Star Trek. And I could watch it 3 times in a row, because I would have passed out a couple of times during the first 2 episodes. It's the same episode I'm talking about. I haven't looked at many of my notes yet. Let me just check I haven't missed anything. Okay, yeah. So I got to a point where I was like, okay, I should probably stop using drugs. Or, no, that wasn't really it. What I thought was, I don't actually want this life. I don't want this life. There was no one left in it. Literally no one left in it. You know, my mum was really ashamed of me, but sticking by me, and that was painful. When I allowed myself to feel any pain, that was. And that was it. And so I kind of did the thing of doing lots of rehabs, which, I don't know, like, I thought I wanted to stop using when I first went into rehab, but I don't think I did want to stop using. And what I did like about it was that you can handle the responsibility over to someone else. Well, that's what I thought. I was like, great, I go into this place, I'll be really sick, people will look after me, And then I kind of went into the mode I went into when I was back in school. Sorry, I just don't want to burp into the microphone. and then I kind of got into this cycle of going into rehabs, making friends in rehab, coming out and using with them, going into rehab, trying to use in rehab, because there's so much point in doing that, you know, trying to get away with something. That, you know, that was really actually quite depressing by the end of it. It's like Andy was saying as well, like, the insanity of the end of my using was, or the way I see it, is that I was using because I really didn't want to be using. And I didn't know what else to do. And the reason, you know, I didn't know what else to do is because I just didn't know anything else. You know, by this time, I was, like, into my early 20s and everyone else who was in their early 20s was in some way doing life. I just didn't have a clue. I just really didn't know. Once I stopped using, I didn't know what I was meant to do. But I didn't want to be using. And because that knowledge was so painful that I was like, I don't want to be doing this, but I have to do it to deal with the fact that I don't want to do it. I couldn't stop. That's why I couldn't stop. And it is totally insane, because I think if you're not an addict and you don't want to be taking something that you're taking, then you stop taking it. Totally ran out of water. Oh wow, thanks very much. So I was in this quandary, and by this point it's got really depressing. I can't even stay at my house anymore because I owe someone money or something. I'm just at my mum's, and I'm ringing up my mum while she's at work, and I can't even be bothered to go into London to get drugs, so I'm asking her, screaming at her down the phone, to bring me home some codeine Linctus so I can drink a whole bottle of that in the hope that I won't start withdrawing. And really, not very nice. And I got to a really desperate place, spiritually and mentally, which was different to how I'd felt before. It was definitely different to how I'd felt before. And I'd been, like I said in the beginning, I'd been to lots of NA meetings because I'd been in rehabs and they'd taken us along in a little bus to an NA meeting. I think actually Andy might have even done the chair at one of them. I can remember it. I'll check with you afterwards, but it's one that I always remember. So I'd been introduced to NA, but when I was in a meeting, I could never sit there. I couldn't sit throughout the whole meeting, and I couldn't physically listen. I just couldn't, I just couldn't sit still, and I couldn't listen, and that's as far as the thinking went. But there was something happened, and I'd heard about in NA meetings about higher powers and praying and all that kind of thing, and I was alone and just desperate and feeling fucking awful in my room at my mum's house, and I did a prayer. I was like, all right, okay, I'll give it a go. People have said it, I'll just give it a go. I don't know what else to do, so I'll give this thing a go. And I did this prayer thing, and then didn't know how to do it, obviously. I knew how to do, confession, because I'd gone to a convent when I was really young. I knew how to do Catholic prayer, I knew how to do confession and stuff, but, And I rang up a friend who I'd used with, and I knew they were in recovery, and we'd been to sort of one of the same long-term treatment centre, but a different time once. And I gave her a ring, and she took me to a meeting. And, it'd always been, I always thought, oh, it's impossible to stop using yourself. You have to get, you have to be in rehab, and they have to take you off slowly, or all manner of terrible things can happen, all this kind of stuff. What I found is, once I decided that I really wanted to stop using, and once I went to this meeting, like I said, with an open mind, and I started to hear stuff, and I just, I reduced myself of my scripts, and I just stopped, and it was the easiest withdrawal ever done, because I really wanted to do it, and I guess it was easy because I'd actually surrendered at that point. I wasn't battling it, and I'd sort of somehow put away lots of fear and lots of expectation and lots of needing to know what was going to happen. I just sort of put my faith in something that I'll just do this. I'll go to one of these meetings every day. There's nothing else for me to do anyway. I didn't have any sort of life. And that's what I did. That's the thing that worked to get me clean. It's the thing that's kept me clean this whole time as well. Kind of really incredible. My first year of recovery, from what I can remember of it, it's like a complete roller coaster ride. Really extreme feelings, lots of lots of joy and hyper manic feelings as well. I'd been sort of had entered society. I hadn't been a part of society for God knows how many years. All sort of things had happened, like the internet and stuff. I didn't have a clue, everyone else my age. I didn't have an email address or anything like that. And it was scary. It was I'm going to do what people do now. I really didn't have a clue, you know. It's like sort of I don't know what it's like, but it's terrifying. It's really terrifying, and it was like a ball of anxiety most of the time. And I don't want to go back. I wouldn't want to go back to my first year of recovery. I have to say that, you know. I always admire people like newcomers and people in their first year, because I know exactly what it feels like, and it's terrifying. You know, it's a bit like what I feel like now, but all the time. and it definitely does get better. Please know that, because I don't feel like this most of the time anymore, and I am able to do life. Okay, what else? What have I written down here? First year recovery, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right, sponsors. So I also just didn't question anything, and I did the things that are suggested to do. I got like a tea commitment, and I got my first sponsor. I think my reasons for choosing my first sponsor was something really weird, like, she seemed quite insane, and I thought I was, so that would be good. I don't know if she's in it. I was trying to think of it the other day. It was something really weird. Like, I had some fixation with, like, thinking my eyeballs were going to explode or something, and like, she had some weird phobia of eyes as well. I was like, that would be perfect. But, you know, the main thing, you know, and I have, when newcomers talk to me about, you know, whether to get a sponsor or how, you know, it doesn't really matter. Just, you know, I got a sponsor. I didn't need to worry about whether that was going to be my sponsor for, you know, rest of my life. I didn't need to worry about when, if they're going to tell me I've got to work the steps straight away or anything like that. I just needed to get one, basically, because that was sort of me showing willingness to do what I needed to do to stay clean. So I did, yeah, great, okay. I'm past the rock bottom bit, by the way. Yeah. yeah, sponsors. I mean, all of it's like totally insane. There were times in early recovery where I just thought, I literally am going mad. I'm going mad. And I remember saying to myself, I really think I'm going mad. And she was just like, I can't remember what she said now. You know, I mean, I can't remember. And obsessions as well, you know, like obsessions just become rife as soon as I didn't have the drugs to obsess about, which luckily, you know, I wasn't obsessing about anymore. That does go away as well. I might have wanted to use at some points, but the obsession about using had gone. That's why I didn't, you know, luckily, because that I didn't use. Yeah, I think I've had four sponsors now, so I didn't stay with that sponsor, and I got another one, and I started working the steps. And what I've noticed from working the steps is that I see a real like visible growth and change in my thinking and behaviour each time I work one. And it's not like sort of some thunderbolts and lightning, where it's like I work one and then, you know, I walk out and it's all like angels or something. But I really do notice it. Like when I did step 4 and 5, because when I came into recovery, I had thousands and thousands of resentments with people. You know, some people I hated. I wanted to stab them because of things that I thought they'd done to me in my using and stuff. And it pissed me off because I can't stand having people like plaguing me in my mind. And you know, now I don't even think about those people. I hardly ever think about them. So it shows me that working those steps definitely kind of dealt with that. And dealing with you know, looking at my defects of character and stuff also. It's just they're just less. And something that I kind of thought recently is, I mean, since I've been clean, lots of really, really great things have happened, and lots of like really horrific things have happened as well. That you know, life stuff that I've had to deal with, really painful things, lots of illness, lots of, you know, having to deal with like violence and stuff like that, lots of things where in the part when I was using, they were excuses to use or excuses to stay using. And the thing is that those difficult things in life or things happening will not make me use. But what happens is if I don't come to meetings and treat my addiction, my defects sort of flare up around those things happening, and I'll act out in other areas to deal with it if I'm not coming to meetings and talking to people about it. It's my defects that will make me use in the end. You know, they always send me to a place of hating myself if I run with my defects, whatever they are. It can just be, you know, behaviours or just thinking or just staying in alone all day or loads of things. But those are the things that make me dislike myself and think that everyone's judging me and I start judging everyone else and wanting to separate myself from everyone else and then ending up in a place where I think, well, I'm all alone, I'm fucked, I'm all alone anyway, and what's the point? And all that negative thinking comes. And those are the times where I think, oh, maybe, you know, yeah, well, or I get jealous, you know, I think, well, other people, you know, when other people find out that, their mum's really ill, well, they just go and have a stiff drink. and I'll find myself... Thanks. I find myself sort of getting jealous about it and angry about it, and then I'll watch a few episodes of Mad Men where they're drinking whiskey every 5 seconds, and I'm like, well, that's normal. That's what I should be able to do. But the thing is, my experience is just that, well, I can do that if I want, but I don't want to because from being clean for as long as I've been clean, when I first got clean, I had... Well, I was mentally unwell. doing that many drugs damaged my mind. And I feel like I've got that back most of the time. And the real thing that I don't want to risk losing is that sanity that I've got and that awareness and the ability to be able to logically think things through and deal with life and participate. All the things that I find quite difficult, but I'm able to do them now. It's taken a lot of work, and even if I could have, you know, like one drink or just go on a bender for a week or something, I don't believe that, you know, I think that my mind would be set back, and I'm really not kind of willing to risk that, because I like feeling like this, and I like being clean, and I like being able to come to meetings, Jay was saying just before I started the chat, you know, like I'm amongst friends, and as scared as I am, being in meetings is like kind of one, the only sort of times I find where I'm totally relaxed and I feel safe, because still out there I do still judge myself against other people, and I feel like people are judging me, and I feel competitive in what I do, and all of these things, you know, they creep back in. You know, I'm not kind of like, I don't live, you know, I'm not perfect, I don't live in this sort of spiritual underworld where I'm not affected by everything that goes on in society, but when I'm in a meeting, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who I am or who anyone else is or what they do or what they can get me or what, or you know, anything. It really doesn't matter to me, and it's like I'm really thankful for that, because it means I can go into a meeting and my mind can switch off. You know, not all the time, but. But I'm sure I've explained this much more eloquently before, but I really, you know, it is a real sort of like a safe haven to come to, and not everyone has that, and not everyone has the steps, and not everyone has sponsors, you know, that they can, it's a real support network. I feel really, like truly lucky to have it. And also, you know, I've got a higher power. and I've got things like the Serenity Prayer. And if I'm, you know, at work or something and I'm freaking out about something or I'm somewhere else, I can just go somewhere quiet and say the Serenity Prayer to myself, because and just know that whatever I'm panicking about at that time, it's going to be over eventually. It'll pass. I'm probably not even going to remember it. And I'm not going to die from the feelings. And sort of going somewhere quiet and acknowledging that
feels good.
Have I done it yet?
Okay, yeah, so...
Oh, I don't know what I'll say now. Obviously, I'm thinking, oh, no, I didn't get very many laughs. I haven't been very entertaining. thank you very much. A bit more hanging. And I don't know. I hope that there's some sort of message in there. Basically, the main message I just want to put across is that, I mean, I know what it's like when you're using and all that you know is using, and you've sort of isolated yourself off from life so much that you can't see a way out of it, and even if you see people who are clean, who are going bad, you just kind of don't understand it or don't fathom it. And I kind of wanted, I wanted a written guarantee that if I came to meetings that my life would be absolutely amazing. And you know, when I made that decision, and that was a really important part, that I made the decision to stop using and come to NA, what I said was, well, I'll just try it out, because I can always go back to using. And that's the thing, that I can always go back to using, but now I don't want to. I really don't want to do that. It's really worth doing, because my life actually is incredible. It really, really is incredible. I've done things that I never would have thought were possible. I never would have thought that any life could sort of dramatically turn around that much, from a completely, you know, unfunctioning human being with no prospect and nothing, to, you know, a really full, varied, exciting life. It's all through coming to NA and working this program. I definitely, you know, I know I wouldn't have it without that. I know I wouldn't have it. And so this is the foundation that I keep in my life. and it's a really good one. I'll leave it there. Thanks.